I don't know, from what I've observed of our little group, what you're describing is our little group.
Yes and no. I'm interested in, well, I think the meetings I enjoyed the most, yes. It was our little group. But this group had less of a, the focus of this group was really a lot broader than what I'm presenting.
Yeah, and we've strayed a lot too. And, but I don't know if any of us have ever, at least from what I gather you, you think Christianity is, how you define your Christianity. I haven't seen that in this group. If so, we're the most disorganized group of Christianity that walked.
No, but I think, and Dennis, I could be wrong, and it's always dangerous to think what other people might be, how they might process reality, because I don't even know how I process it.
Yeah.
But I think there's a possibility that more of us in this group would love Jesus if not for a lot of the stumbling blocks that have been laid down, the assumptions and the associations that have been laid down historically by Christianity.
Well, I agree with you, but that's why I think we're in this group and not going on Sunday to St. Thomas of Aquinas Church.
And that's good. That's good. But I think that the charter that that Evan has embodied is primarily intellectual inquiry. Wherever that leads.
Yeah, it's not related to Christianity or Jesus.
Right.
The mission of our group is.
I mean, it's accidental. I mean, it's not that, like, I'm not excluded from the group. Yeah. I mean, you guys are all, you know, I feel no hostility.
From this day forward, we're calling you Lewis a non-Christian.
But that's not my point. You can call me whatever you want.
We used to call you the apostle. Now we're calling you the apostate.
It's what I call myself that counts.
Yeah, I'm the apostate.
I'm amazed that you say, not amazed, that's not the proper way of describing it, but that you've been depressed over trying to figure out being a Christian, or depressed over being a Christian.
Yeah, well, and this is one respect where Evan can relate to me. Evan experienced a form of Christianity, and some of it had pretty scriptural grounding that was so oppressive that he sought to be totally free from it. True that?
Yes, true.
I mean, you've said that in the meetings on a couple of occasions. It's just amazing. I'm not trying to scapegoat Christianity, which would just be one more. I'd be creating one more prison house for myself. I'm just saying I want my focus to be the focus that got me excited for the first time in my life about something much bigger than myself. And that's the Jesus who healed people, loved people, rebuked people, and died, a martyr's death.
So,
and rose again. Otherwise, it's just a great story.
So Jesus, and I'm just trying to figure out what you're saying. Jesus, is Jesus also God, the Father, the Son?
I have written something on my webpage concerning that, which I'd like to refer you to. That'd be a huge distraction to what I came to share tonight.
But is your Jesus God?
I would never reduce things grammatically to that statement.
That's pretty big.
I would feel as though I were doing an injustice to Jesus, to God the Father, and to the English language, and to the minds of my listeners, if I use that sentence, which is a very popular sentence these days. But there's no way I'm devoting my life to a peer, or to
a peer.
Just another human being.
That's the Catholic Church developed the doctrine of the Trinity just so that they don't have to say that sentence.
I didn't get to the Trinity yet. I'm just trying to go to the God. Then I go to the Trinity.
Well, the whole point of the Trinity is so you never have to say the sentence, Jesus is God.
But Jesus is divine.
Well, so you can't, I mean...
But if Jesus is divine...
It's to
God.
Kind of save the grammar from such reductionist terms like that.
And if Jesus wasn't God... If Jesus wasn't God, then what's the point? I mean, then we can all just sit and say, you know, he's a great healer, a great person, someone to be admired, but so was Buddha, so was Muhammad.
Anyway, I'd really rather not.
So I'm not going to get an answer out of you.
No, as I say, I've already written something. That doesn't interest me, though. Really, that discussion...
doesn't interest me.
That discussion doesn't... Well, so you can, I'll send you the link, free of charge, to my article that I wrote, and you can get my opinion that way. But that doesn't interest me. That's not what excites me. The night I went to my first prayer meeting, my leading question wasn't, is Jesus God?
All right, let me ask you a question.
I want to know if Jesus is real.
Who is Jesus?
All I can say is, get on your knees, read the New Testament. That's the only answer I could give. And it's the only reason I stayed a Christian for so long. Because I was getting a PhD in English. I was surrounded by very sophisticated forms of skepticism, you know, that weren't answered by C.S. Lewis, who was kind of the mainstay for, you know, reading Christians for a while. And I was surrounded by them, and I was seeing things chipped away. Even if I'd had my head in the sand, I was still seeing things chipped away. But what I never felt like I had to relinquish was, I love the Gospels. You know, and there are sentences that bother me the way they bother Evan. I think they bother Evan a little more, but they do bother me. And there's things I don't understand, but the general picture, I love it.
I think if you and I were to highlight our favorite parts of the Gospels, we'd have like a complimentary...
You guys should do it.
We could.
The opposite pattern.
No, we could. Although I bet I would highlight a lot of it.
There would be some overlap.
There'd be, that Venn diagram would, you know, those circles would overlap. But you're right. And that's, I told Chris a long time ago, when I use the word Christian, I still will call myself an American when I'm going through customs. But I said to Chris, when I became a Christian, which now I'm just saying, when I got excited about learning about this Jesus, I left. Rebellion was something that I was exposed to in a very negative format. And rebellion was associated with just hatred of authorities, hatred of my parents, things like that. And so to me, rebellion was something kind of categorically negative. Whereas to Chris said, actually, you were converted to rebellion, not away from rebellion. Yeah. And so we just have different histories, which probably means we read the Gospels differently, too.
Probably.
And I can appreciate, you know, civil disobedience way more than I used to be able to. Because I was so scared of bad rebellion, I just thought everyone needed to step in line mindlessly. Mm-hmm. Even that bumper sticker question authority used to bother me.
I try to break one law a day.
You can't see? This is why I feel like I succeeded as a parent, because you try to break one law a day.
I don't want to run into you at the end of the year. When the big laws are left to break. Like murder.
No, it gets repetitive.
You can break the same law every day.
Yeah, it's
boring. So I'm related, and I'm not asking this question in a way that it sounds like I'm challenging what you're saying, but just out of curiosity, if you're looking to the Gospels, the New Testament, as your source, how can you quantify that? How can you, like you two guys just said, you would highlight the parts that you like, and throw away the rest, basically. How could you do that? How could you select certain portions of the gospel to be true and certain portions not to be true?
Wasn't it Thomas Aquinas who did that?
No, Thomas Jefferson edited it.
Thomas Jefferson.
Took the miraculous parts out.
Yeah, the super stuff.
Which I've never seen a copy of.
Well, I have that too.
Dennis, I didn't say I would. I didn't say I would throw away the parts Chris highlighted. And
no,
I think by and large, the Gospels and the Book of Acts are tremendously reliable. I've never felt like I needed to say I believe every word in the Bible is inerrantly divinely inspired. I've never felt a need to say that, even though the Christianity I grew up in admonished me to do that. But I do believe that the picture that emerges from the Gospels is a true picture. And parts that I don't understand or appreciate, I don't discard. I'm just not going to, you know, force myself or pretend that I do appreciate them or understand them.
So you,
I am not editing the New Testament.
So 100% of the Gospel is New Testament is accurate and correct.
I do not. As I just said, I've never felt a need to say that every word in the Bible or in the New Testament is inherently inspired by God, as though it's untranslated and there's no, you know, historical corruption through transmission, or that the writers never winked or nodded, you know, in the process of writing it. I'm just saying that in the main, it's the best thing I've ever read.
What's the best thing you ever read?
Sorrows of Young Werther by Goethe.
But when you say that,
it can't compare to the Gospels.
Yeah.
If you read the Gospels, you're reading God. If you're reading Goethe, you're reading fiction.
Well, you're certainly reading something that claims to represent
right.
God.
Exactly.
Whereas great novels would do more for my imagination.
Yeah.
Shoot, that Animal Farm touched me more than the New Testament, than the crucifixion scene did when the horse died. So things can have a much more emotional power. But I don't get out of bed thinking I've got to, you know, find Norwell or find the pigs or straighten out the pigs today.
What's his name? Boxer.
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 Yeah. May he rest in peace.
It's the most horrible part of any novel. Most touchingly depressing part.
Okay. Yeah.
I wish he rose from the dead.
Well, there are other things you can read with all sorts of things rising from the dead.
Thanks. We'll look into it.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for listening. And there's no one in this room I would not want to see again.
That's a strange thing to say.
But there's not. I mean, I think I'm going to see some of you less than I do, but I always want to see all of you.
Likewise.
I've seen Ted twice today.